Minister Elkev, thank you very much for your time, and I'm happy that we were able to make the podcast happen. How is everything going?
Very well. I'm pleased to be here. It's with a lot of enthusiasm that I'm curious to the talk we're going to have. Yeah,
that's great. So I'm happy to discuss mobility with you, but I would like to know more about your background. What made you enter the mobility industry? Because it also has to do something with passion, but also why did you enter politics as well? Because that's not the ideal. It's a tough business, I would say.
Yeah. It's two different questions. So entering politics was more natural for me, and entering mobility, it's another, there's another explanation. So politics came first. So when I was 18, I moved to Brussels because it was for me the only city in Belgium that's...
And you're not from Brussels? Or
no, I'm. I lived in the north of the country, in the north of Antwerp, when I was young. And so I really needed the city, the big city. And so Brussels was the only real option for me. So I came to study here. I stayed here. And I still love Brussels. I feel Brussels. My children live here. But as a student, I was already engaged in Amnesty International, Oxfam. So in a lot of... organizations trying to save the world, yeah, to change the world. So that's still a part of my conviction. And at that time, it was the conviction that we need to make sure that everybody has equal opportunities here, but in the rest of the world, and also this generation, but also generations after us. So that's the main motivation for a lot of my actions. How can I leave this place better than I found it at that stage. And so politics, kind of came natural. So I started at university. I came in contact with political parties, and for me, the Green Party was the only party that responded to my ideological framework. And so I became active behind the scenes. I was a volunteer, and then at a certain moment, I was on the list and went to parliament. So it was a more gradual, natural. It was never choice, because I found myself being elected
to
parliament.
That's what most politicians say.
Yes, but I was active, so I cannot say that I was not into politics, but politics is where we change the world. So I was convinced that I needed to be political active. As a student, I also tried to create my own political party. And so politics for me was a choice. I think I cannot imagine not to be in politics, but the Green Party and going to a party politics, I took some more time, and I was on the list, but to support the Green Party. It was never with the intention, I want to have a place in Parliament. And then suddenly I got a place in Parliament, which was a nice day, but I was literally in the hospital giving birth to my son. So it was quite unexpected, but I was happy to be there. And so I was 10 years in Parliament, 5 years in the Brussels Parliament, and 5 years in the Flemish Parliament. And I always focused on a more social team. So I was active in the Brussels Parliament on housing, on work, on equal policy. So in those matters, to create more equal opportunities for everybody here in Brussels. In the Flemish Parliament, I was really specializing in welfare and well-being, so in healthcare, in social care, so in those topics. And for me, mobility follows that. And I think it's not a logical choice, but for me, it is logical. Because if you look at Brussels, and if you see what we need in Brussels, now we need to talk about public space. For me, we need to talk about housing, employment. It still remains important, but I think the public space is where we can change a lot, because most people in Brussels, they don't have a garden, they don't have a terrace. So this is our collective home, and we're treating our collective home like one big corridor to have cars passing from one side to the other, instead of creating a living room where you can be, where you want to be, where you can meet others, where children can play. So I really think that if we want to get the potential out of Brussels, we need to change our public space. And if we need to do so, it's talking about space. For me, time and space are two really important political issues. And so we need to talk about space. And if we want to change how the public space is organized, we need to talk about mobility. And so for me, mobility, I'm not motivated to transport people as quickly as possible from point A to B. I'm interested in how can we make sure that people can get around in all freedom, where they want to go, when they want to go, how they want to go, and how can we regain space in doing so, and how can we put more trees, more playgrounds, more public space open in our city. And that's why I said, okay, we need to talk about mobility, so let's change mobility.
Wow. Yeah.
That's the long introduction to your question.
No, but I think actually the way you explain it, it makes sense that you want to make a change because the social housing drives the economy, and also like the public spaces also helps with the economy as well, and mobility is attached to that. Now, Brussels has different communes. It's not easy to make agreements with the different communes. I think we saw that when it came to the scooters in Brussels, which for many years were a nuisance. How did you go about it to, as the minister, to really try to make a change for the whole of Brussels?
I think it is...
In terms of mobility.
It is a reality. It's a reality that the communes in Brussels, and we have... the way we are organized in Brussels, it's not efficient and it's not okay. So having 19 communes, having 6 police zones, 19 OCMVs, the social departments, yeah, having so many different government institutions not working together but doing sometimes the same work, so really inefficient and costs a lot of money, and it makes people getting lost in who is doing what. So that is a problem in Brussels. But what I've always said is we need to tackle this problem, but I cannot use this as an excuse not to book results. And it's too easy to say, yes, I wanted to, but I couldn't because. So we need to tackle both. We need to work on programs and put pressure in changing that structure of Brussels. But in the meantime, I'm responsible for mobility. So in this structure, I need to convince mayors, I need to convince communes to act and to move. And we have done a lot, so I think I will always say it has to go faster, it has to be more, but we have done a lot in the last 5 years. We've realized a lot, and often also together with local communes. For example, we implemented the City 30, which means that instead of driving 50 as a general rule, it's 30 an hour. So a very important measurement for road security. Well, we have done that in collaboration with the 19 communes, and we've really, during 1 year, behind the scenes, we prepared street by street. A lot of energy, but it has been implemented in a good, decent way. There has been a lot of discussion about it, but it is a strong example of how we can collaborate with the 19 communes at the same moment. We also have infrastructure works. There are several projects that are being executed or being planned in which we show, okay, we can collaborate, but there's also often conflict. So it is always looking for new ways to convince, to make deals and to collaborate. And we really need to change the structure of Brussels. But I try not to hide behind that.
Yeah. Okay, I see. Actually, I think it might be related with the structure of Brussels. But for example, Goodmove is something that had a lot of misinformation online and people were against it and protesting it. And sometimes they're not having the right facts. So how do you go about it and making sure that everybody in Brussels, the different communes, the people who live here are informed with the actual facts and not the misinformation they see online? Because sometimes people, I saw online that they thought that their business would go down because the suppliers couldn't park there or something like that, but that is not the case. I think Goodmove actually improves the way of living. But how do you go about to provide that information to the people?
I think it's a challenge for all politics all over the world for the moment, how to make sure that we communicate well with the population, that we connect well, that we have good information. So it is also a challenge for mobility. So Goodmove is the mobility plan for the 10 years for Brussels. So in this plan, we have a lot of actions about getting more public transport, getting more logistics by the water or by bike. So it is a complex plan. And one of the elements in the plan is to have fewer transit traffic in the communes. And to do so, you need circulation schemes. And so it means that everybody can still get into certain neighborhoods, but it is not
attractive. Is it more a controlled flow of...
Yes, so that you're going to canalize the traffic on the main axis. Yep. And so if you want to visit somebody, you need to go to a shop, it is still possible, but it is de-encouraged to just... to escape one red light, to take a small road and then you have traffic everywhere. So it is circulation measurements in order to go against all the Waze's and the Google Maps of these times. We which are a great help to make sure that you can get there, but it's not interesting to get through. And so we've seen, for example, in the city center where we've introduced this plan, that we have almost 30% lesser traffic because of the transit traffic is cut off and is on the main axis, which creates conditions for walking and cycling and creates good conditions, and the shops are doing well. So that was a really difficult moment, like any change in mobility. Every time we implement something new, because we had it now, you talk with good movies, it's linked to this particular measurement. But driving 30 an hour was also very,
there was also a lot of people discussion.
Well. Yes, the shops will close down, nobody will come. So every time we implement a new measurement, these are arguments that come. And for me, it is always important to listen to the arguments, because if a shop owner is afraid that their shop will close down, you need to take it serious. It is their, it's their business, especially Brussels. We have some big companies, of course, but the power of Brussels is all those entrepreneurs, the small entrepreneurs starting things up.
And local and shops. And
yes.
Stuff.
Yeah. And so supporting them for me is also important, because they're the real tissue of our city, but even of our country, because 20% of the richness of Belgium is created in Brussels, although we only have 10% of the population. So we do create richness. We need to listen to that. We cannot say, in 6 months this will be over. No, you have to take it seriously, but you have to inform them and saying, look at this example, look at that example, and it has actually improved. So we have other examples also in Brussels where after measurements have been taken, we see an improvement. And that's a good thing now that we have the example of the city center, the Pentagon, we've installed it. You can say, try to book a restaurant on a Tuesday evening. And it's difficult. So it means business are going well. And so the data are showing it's going well, not excluded that one or two still are having problems or there's some problems, but the majority are actually booming and doing well. And I think that's an important message. So it is communicating on the street. So it's just popping in the shops, talking to people. It is really being present. That is the key element.
Yep.
But we've seen it, because your question was how to counteract fake news and misinformation. And we've also seen during COVID for vaccination and health issues, how difficult it was, much more in Brussels than the rest of the country, to communicate with the population. Something that we really have difficulty in doing. If you go, for example, to Flanders, if you want to reach population and you are at the news of VTM and VRT, you have 70% of population or something like that.
Yeah.
We do not have that in Brussels. There's a lot of informal communication systems. People depend on very different media.
Don't you have neighborhoods organizations, maybe?
We do have them, but it's not, you cannot just poof, we send out a message and it reaches everybody. It is very, very complex, and we need to learn about it. And I think COVID was really an important message in saying we often think we've communicated to the population, and then we realized we haven't done so. And the same with Good Move. The moment we implemented it in, for example, Kuregem, which is one of the neighborhoods where it was in several neighborhoods that we implemented it. And we thought we had done a really good campaign about participation, communication. We had evening sessions online, real life. We went to the market. We went door to door. So we really went to the people.
Yeah.
But still, the moment we implemented, we noticed most of the people really didn't get the information. And so that's a strong lesson in being more and more creative in how to do so, taking time to do so, looking for new methods. And this was now a mobility. We had it with COVID. It's a challenge in every topic. It's how to make sure that city of 1.2 billion people with so many communities, so many languages, so many origins, many people moving, because some neighborhoods people move every two years. So how do you communicate? How do you tackle that? That's a constant challenge, also in mobility.
Yeah, but now Good Move has been around for a year and the numbers are pretty good. You know, I had Bart on the podcast, he explained it. How come there's still some people that are not pro Good Move, even though the results are pretty positive?
Because, well, some people, the results are positive, but depends on what you give importance to. For me, the importance of having nice neighborhoods to shop, to visit, to walk, to live in, for me, that's important. That's my political goal. I want to have not car-free neighborhoods, but car-low neighborhoods where people have fewer noise, where there's fewer stress, fewer
better
accidents,
air,
better air quality. So these are, for me, important goals and we've reached them. But if your goal is, I want to have as many options as a car driver to get around, well, then it is another parameter. And so
yeah, I see. Yeah.
It is, some people are against it because, well, we still have traffic jams, but it's for the moment like every traffic jam is because of good moves. No, we have traffic jams before. They're actually slightly less, but it goes against the intuition of people. And that's also because during COVID, there was practically no traffic jams. It was like Brussels was all quiet, it was nice, and it was terrible COVID, but on for cars, it was suddenly we discovered our city without the cars. Like,
okay, yeah, we noticed
this
as well
is what can happen if we really tackle car use in Brussels. And so this is becoming the reference. So then after COVID, traffic jams came back and it's like they were never there before. And I think that's an important element in explaining why some people are really frustrated, because they think that it's all because of good move. And I think we need to, we show it in the data, say, no, look at the data from today, 23, 24, and we compare it with 18, 19. These are, but it is a rational debate for something that is what people are feeling. And also changing things is always difficult.
Exactly.
And if changing things in public space, it is really close to people. It's in their street, it's in their neighborhood, it's their daily habits that needs to be tackled. So
that's tough.
It takes time, but I'm convinced that after a while, it slows down. You were surprised I said the City 30 was controversial.
Yeah.
Because, and it's not controversial anymore, it's true. It was 3 years ago, but that moment is really controversial. And so you need to take time for some things to
And it becomes
to
a habit after a while as well, right? Do you have any other initiatives or projects like the CD30 or the Good Move coming up? Or?
So we, well, we have 50 actions in our big mobility plan, which is the Good Move plan. So one of those was reducing the speed limit, offering more public transport. That's really important. So we increased public transport in Brussels with 15% this last 5 years. And we want to add another 12% to it because we really want people to use. We're very proud of public transport in Brussels. We want people to use it. We want it to be comfortable. So that's a really important one. Investing in cycling. Brussels is not seen as a cycling city, although the potential is there. And it is about infrastructure. We know that if we know that those people who might want to cycle and don't do it, if you ask why, it's the safety and the feeling of safety. And so infrastructure is crucial to do so. So if we've put in place 60 kilometers of new bicycle lanes, but we need to continue that and we need to really have this network of
connected. And there's concrete plans for that as well?
Yes, we have plans. We are continuing to doing so. It's always, like you said, fighting with the communes, but we need to continue. Also walking. Since last year, we know that the most popular way to get around is by foot. So within Brussels, not if you come from Kortrijk.
That's already a good sign that the city is becoming more and more livable and for pedestrians.
Yeah, but we still need to invest it because on inclusive, if you walk around with if you with children or if you're in a wheelchair, the city is really, really not well organized. So we still need to implement on a good walkability of our city. So we're renovating the pavements, which is not the most sexy or popular thing, but for me, it's crucial.
It's so part of the whole.
It's crucial thing. If you want a network. So we've renovated 5 kilometers in the renovation plan. We're making boulevards. So we have identified access through the city where we want people to walk so that we connect parks with nice car-free zones. And so to make sure that you have those natural ways to get around in the city for people walking. And so to gently insist people on walking more and more and further distances. So there's several plans also for transporting goods because a lot of the traffic is delivery. People
use a lot of ordering cargo bikes and Kortrijk actually.
Yes, we have this. So it's a lot of people buy online, which is easy and it's quick and it's helpful, but it creates a lot of traffic of those fans driving through. So we also have this project with cargo bikes. So we have really invested in a long project on making sure that companies shift to cargo delivery. Yeah. And it is a real success. We have about 70 companies who changed at least a part of their transport to cargo bikes. Mm-hmm. They can test it. They can get little fundings to buy the equipment. And so there's a real shift going on. Also by the water, we have a canal in Brussels, but it's can be used better. So we're working on how can, for example, construction sites, we have a lot of waste that needs to get away. How can we do it by the water, reuse it in Brussels, keep it local? So all those projects are coming on to make sure that we make this modal shift and make sure that in that way we create space. And that's crucial. Also, having plans on what to do with the space. So on one hand, you want to create space, but planting trees, for example, it sounds easy, but it's so necessary in Brussels. So we have this tree planting program, especially in the most dense areas. Next to the canal, there's the most dense areas where a lot of people live on small places. So making sure that we're going there with a priority to create green spaces, to take some concrete out, put some trees in, and to make sure that we do continue to change the city. So yes, we have a lot of plans in the pipeline. It's not finished yet.
Well, you seem to know what to do, so that's a good thing. Now you've been investing a lot of in infrastructure, but what about the shared mobility, for example, the bikes? When I was a student, we used to walk or use the Velo bikes. Amazing. However, it's been a long time since I was a student, and the Velo bikes are still kind of like the same and haven't really innovated with time. Even though the pricing is good, they have the best locations in Brussels, to be honest. It's perfect, but the quality is not as good as in Antwerp. Because I had Koen Kennis on the podcast as well, and he explained about the Velo in Antwerp, the investments they were doing to also like other neighborhoods that are less well off. I was wondering if Brussels also had, you know, some plans for Velo, because I know Velo implemented electric bikes a few years ago, but they did not end up as it was supposed to be, because there were some issues with the batteries, which is a shame, because I think Velos are really, really important for Brussels, because a lot of people who work also use them to take them at McDonald's Brucaire and then go up. So it's really an amazing thing to have in a city as Brussels. So
I agree with you. So the good thing about Velo is, so it's a shared bike system for €35 a year. So you can, if you use them for longer than half an hour, you start paying. But the first half an hour, and you can get far in Brussels in half an hour. We're not that big as a city. So it's a really good system on a financial way. They're everywhere in Brussels. But the quality of the bikes and electrical bikes is not what you expect today with all the technology that exists today. What is the challenge with Velo? It is a contract with IEC Deco, which is a company that provides
advertisements and publicity
and publicity train stations. Their goal is, and so they had a lot of spaces of publicity in exchange for bikes. And this might have been a good idea 15 years ago when we signed a contract, but today we say we need to separate those two things. Publicity, we need to have fewer publicity in public space, because it takes a lot also on road security. People are distracted. So having fewer publicity in public space, for me, it's important. And having a good shared bike system that evolves with the time and that has as goal to transport people and not as goal, we have a contract and we want to keep it. The contract with IEC Deco is signed until 26. And I think the people signed it in the time, they did a good thing because they negotiated, and at the time it was a good contract. But now we see, it's been for a too long a period, and technology has shown us different options. So we are now preparing. What are we doing after 26? Yeah. And so in my plans, it's a personal plan, but we're trying to implement it, it becomes part of public transport. So we have public transport, which is trains, buses, metro, trams, but it's always vehicles transporting. And I dream, and I'm trying to create this dream, that you can also take a bike with your subscription, and that it's part of public transport. The public transport company has a contract with the government, so we just renewed that contract, and so we wrote in a part, we want you to look in how you can make this part of the public transport. So the decision to do so needs to be taken But we are now doing all the studies. Is this possible? Can this be done? What are the alternatives? If it's not a public transport company, can we do it differently? So we are preparing, because I make the same analysis as you. The system has so much potential and it's not fully used. We have Velo. We also have other shared bike systems. So we have it's the free floating bike system, so those exist, but they're not as they're more expensive, because you really pay for the hour and they don't have this publicity contract behind it. But we are preparing the future, and we need to make sure that it will be better, because Brussels has, as you say, a lot of potential for shared biking.
Because Velo is really, the price is good and the locations are good. The free floating are a bit expensive, I would say, sometimes. And now with the tender that is done, how will you actually ensure that the price, because I can imagine now they had maybe like 6-7 different operators. It was competitive. Everybody was lowering the price. But now if there are only two left, I am also in the business. So my, my thought would be, okay, we will create a duopoly and maybe increase the price over time. Yeah. I guess the contract is for 3 years or something. Yeah. So maybe after a year, then the price will be much higher. Do you have any in the contract, some stipulations that says, okay, you cannot increase the price by that much or something, or are they free to do what they want?
So we have, for the moment, why did we have this limitation? It's for the shared biking, it was not so much a problem, but for the shared steps, it was really a problem that we had an over offer. And so on the pavements, everywhere in Brussels, people were stumbling about it. They were parked wrong. And so even the operator said, we have an over offer, because every operator wanted to have an offer that would serve all the convenient population. And so if you have 6-7 operators serving everybody, you have an over. We had too much offer for the demand in Brussels. So it was part of making sure that this new way of getting around steps, they're quite new, and it is another way to get around, which is, and every way to get around is good. But it really, really was and still is a problem for people on the pavements. And if they're not parked in a decent way, it creates frustration. And many people, people with disabilities, people having fewer eyesight, were counting us saying, we don't get out anymore because it's so dangerous, because you never know when you can fall over. So it was really something to say, we cannot tolerate this impact of a vehicle. And so it's regulating is a way to control it better and to make sure that it is well regulated. So we are keeping 3 bicycle operators and 2 step operators. So they do had to, for the tender, they had to prove and how they were going to put on pricing, for example, giving reductions for students and having a social impact. So they had to have a case in which they talked about pricing, environmental issues, road security, so several criteria. So these were the criteria for the tender. So it was part of the selection. We do know that there's a risk. We have talked to other cities as well, and we've seen that in some cities, if it's only 2 steps, they might make agreements amongst them. Let's change the price. We want to avoid that. But we've seen in other cities in which it's the contrary, say, okay, we want to be the best of the two. And also because we renew, there's evaluation systems. They have criteria, so they need to respond to the problem. Have a system that we will look on what's the evolution on that, because we know that it's a risk that might happen. So these are, but we can also say, okay, then the contract stops, because...
So you can stop the contract within the 3 years. You can, if they don't follow...
If they don't respect the criteria and if they don't respect rules, there are possibilities to say, okay, you're not, we made an agreement, you have a tender, you need certain objectives. Okay. So we do have evaluation options so far, but we'll see how it continues. The operators were system. Now that we've selected, I can imagine that those that were not selected are disappointed, and I hope they will continue to fair play and say, okay, we'll go to other cities, or we come back in 3 years, or we'll watch the market evolutions. So I hope they will play the game, but that's now the question for the coming days in how will this transition go further. But it was crucial to keep also public support for steps.
Of course,
because people were really, angry, and it's, and I understand if it's on your, if
and
you're
it's
walking.
And it's been going on for many years, actually. I think it started in 2019.
Yeah.
And 2019, I wrote an article about it. In 2019, one commune in Brussels actually already did a pilot for dedicated parking.
Yeah.
But they never went through with it. But and then in 2023, it actually...
Yeah. Yeah. Now we've said, okay, you have the number. So we only have few operators. So the number, for the moment, you have 23,000 steps, which is a lot. We're going to 8,000 steps. So reducing the number, that's not the only thing we're doing. We're also having... drop zones, and they need to the vehicles need to be closed down only in drop zones. So that's also an important element.
Yep.
That drop zones are the new way of parking. So it is free floating, but actually limited to where you can park in the drop zones. So that's an important element. We also have a system that if a step or bike is not in a drop zone, we can take it away. And before we could also do it, but we needed to contact the operator and they had 24 hours to correct it. And only then we could take it away. So it was really slow, difficult procedure. So we said, now we said, okay, if it's really dangerous, for example, in the middle of a pavement, we can take it away and we can give a fine to the operator to come and collect it. So it is a way to make sure that if they don't play by the rules, we will act and we will have actions with inspectors in taking away the wrongly placed steps, and it's necessary.
And is there a measure to notify wrongly parked scooters, or do you rely on an app like My Street? I know there's an app called My Street.
Fix My Street is an application.
Or do you just rely on people complaining? Because the moment people start complaining, it's often already too much.
Yeah.
Are you proactive or?
We will, but then again, Brussels is complex. So 15% of the roads are regional roads, rest are local roads.
Yeah.
So we will have actions by the region saying, okay, from on that date, we will do a big action in collecting and cleaning all the wrongly parked vehicles. We do have inspectors who are on the street. There's the same team that also inspects the taxis and different. So we do have inspectors on the street who can react. Also the local communities, because 85% of the streets are local streets.
Yep.
They also can, they also have the power to implement. And if they take away, they can get the money from the fine, so that the system is paid for, that those who do the controlling are also getting the income of the fine. So we do have this system to make sure that there will be controls, but there also will be people complaining and reacting on people complaining. It will be part of it. If we know, it's often the case, if people are saying, hey, there's a problem there, often sometimes, especially with modern technologies, people are sending information faster than the government can discover. Fix My Street is an application which has several options. So if you have a street tile that is it's wrong, or if there's a hole in it, so it is a way to report a problem in the street. If there is a traffic light not working, so it is a way to inform the government about your problem. One of the instruments we have, but people are also sending emails, telephoning. Talking to the local politicians. So I'm convinced there will be a lot of, it will take some time to get a good habit also for the operators to really educate their users to do it well. But we've seen a lot of improvement, because it's not, we're now entering the final phase of the different steps we put in place. But we've seen by implementing drop zones, by having communes making those drop zones, by having everything installed, that it's going better and better, and people are more and more like, okay, I need to find a drop zone, where is it? So it is becoming more, it's going better, I think, for the moment, but we still have work to do.
Okay, but still seems that there's still a lot of administration behind it or something, because I also have my own shared electric bike company in Kortrijk, and we've already resolved this issue years ago, and I think you can prevent all this administration if, as a city, you ask the operators that they can only park in the drop zone. So, for example, I will show for us, if someone, we'll also put it on the screen, if someone puts in the destination, we actually send the bike to the nearest dedicated bike parking, and then we tell them how far to walk, so one more minute's walking. And that's the bike doesn't close if it's not in the dedicated bike parking. Yeah. So the money keeps on running. Yeah. So that forces them to make sure that they don't pay too much so that they always park there. And I think if the city asks this to operators, it will save a lot of time and a lot of complaints. And
it's what we've done now. So you need to park in a drop zone, otherwise you cannot close it. But to do so, you needed to have the drop zones. And so it was, we need also to have our part of the engagement as a government to make sure that those dedicated zones are there. And on the most places, they're physically there. You can see them. On some places in Brussels, it's only in the application, but the application is clear. So we've tested that also. There's no sign in the streets because they're still creating them, because it takes also time and you need good weather conditions to paint on the street and all those things. So we are making sure that it is in the application, and the only way from the 1st of February where you can do it, it's already in many places. It's only possible to lock the bike or the step in a dedicated place. But from the 1st of February, it will be for the whole of the region. And so even those areas that are not having their physical drop zones, they're now giving on the spots to the operators, and operators are playing the game along. So they do put it in their system, their technology can handle it. So
I think that will save a lot of misery. Yeah. I think that's a good
way forward. But one of the elements is, if we do so, if you have 23,000 steps and a lot of bikes, the drop zone is filled. That's why we needed to reduce the number, because if you have drop zones and they're over full, people cannot stall it, that's also a problem. So it was necessary to have all these elements together, and the legislation to do so, it took us, you have to have several steps, it's a legal procedure,
so Belgium,
it took time to implement. So I hope now we see already how much better it's going thanks to the drop zones. It is going better, and
it's very pleasant to walk now, actually. I think there are already some scooters removed because it's less busy when I was walking here. Yeah. It's very pleasant. Do these operators also have to pay like a license? I saw yesterday on the news in Liège that operators have to pay around 20 euros per scooter. Yeah. Is that the same for Brussels?
We do have license. We do have a financial system that's in it. I can give you the exact numbers. The main goal for us is to make sure that they do it decently and properly. So there's also a system of fining. So if a scooter is not in a drop zone, if it's blocking the street, if it's dangerous, we can take it and they can get a fine. So it's something else than the tax to put it on the street. So both systems exist. But for me, the importance is really making sure that we are severe on the right parking, because the patience of people is gone. It's they really need to show good practices now.
Okay. And I think what also is aligned with your mobility strategy is this new app, Floya, the MAS app. Could you tell me a little bit more about that? The reason why to add another app? And I guess it's owned by the government, because MAS apps don't really make money, so I guess it's subsidized. So, but why another app?
Because we need another app, because there's a lot of apps. And I know this sounds crazy, but Floya is actually an app, and it is organized by the government, but especially the public transport companies. So the STIP, the MEVB, has launched it, but with the help of the regional government. And what's the idea? It's now, if you want to get around in Brussels, you need to really know how to get along. You need to know, okay, I can take a dot step, or I can take a poppy car, or I can go by Cambio, or I can use the STIP, or take the LAN, MVB. Yeah. So I have about 12 applications on my phone that I use regularly. So it is, you need to really know your way. So it's not organizing traffic around people. So the idea of Floya was, you need to have an app in which that you say, okay, I'm going from point A to B. What's the best way? And I know those apps exist. I do also have Google Maps on my phone, and it's telling you, okay, you can do it, but you cannot from that application directly book your Cambio or ask the taxi to come. So it's still, you see an option, but then you still need to open the other app. So the idea is, if one integrated application that shows you how to get there in a multimodal way, because Floya is showing more options than many other applications. Say, okay, you can cycle for 10 minutes and then you can take train and that will bring you faster. So it has a lot of intelligence behind it. But the idea is, especially at UK, from in that app, you can pay all the ways to get around. And so it is an all integrated application. We were very inspired by the system in Vienna. So they also have this, and it showed that it helps people discover new ways of getting around. Most people are in a certain habit, especially in Belgium, we're very monomodal. People are either cyclists, either the car user, either public transport. And we need to become more multimodal, because sometimes you're tired, you know, to cycle, and then perhaps the metro is a good option, or sometimes you have a lot of luggage and you really need a car. And yep. So being multimodal is really the future of Brussels, and not everybody needs to bend their car forever, but if for one or two times a week you can get around differently, it really changes the difference in the streets. So yep. Floia is your partner in getting around in Brussels, and it's offering you ways to get around you didn't know, and everything is integrated in app. It is a growing app, so she's now launched. I call her she because Floia is a woman. So she will grow and she will become more and more.
Yep.
And I'm really convinced that it will be very practical also for tourists. How can I get around? Do I get to? And you just put in your credit card and you can pay every mode.
You can pay in the app as
that's,
well.
That's yes.
Does it provide?
That's a really important element.
Exactly. Does it also provide data to the city? Because I can imagine it has useful data for the city in terms of mobility, the planning of streets and so on. If you have all the data, it's very, very useful.
Absolutely. The data are anonymized, of course. We do respect privacy. But now we have a lot of data for public transport. You know, bus line 95 is really saturated, so we need to put in bigger buses on that line. But it is because people are losing that bus. But with this app, we really know from where are people going. So you can really learn a lot. And perhaps the 95 needs to have another direction or cut in two, because we see many people actually needing this or this way to get around. It will collect a lot of data in how to offer and organize our public transport or our transport in general in Brussels. Also on who, because we know that men and women, for example, use different ways to get around. So it will really learn us a lot on who is getting around, what are the real needs of mobility, and how can we respond to those needs in the best way.
Yep.
So there's a really rich data collection for the government behind it as well.
You just mentioned buses, and actually I want to go on that, because recently it was in the news that some buses were being cut, bus lines. What is your opinion?
Not in Brussels. Really, really want to stress
see,
on that.
I only watch the Dutch
That's true. Flanders. So in Flanders, so the mobility and public transport is regional. So Flanders has the LAN, a regional public transport. In Brussels, we have MEVB, which is our regional transport. And MEVB, actually, we have added new lines. We have several new lines, bus lines. We have augmented the frequency of the bus lines, of the tram lines, of the metro lines. We have created new tram lines. We are still doing work, for example, tram line for Nederhoofd-Reebeek. So we have invested a lot in our public transport. And you know, and it's really, perhaps I'm a bit chauvinist and I love my city, but I think we can be proud of the quality of public transport in Brussels, even if it can be better. And so if I follow, I also follow the debate in Flanders, where there's 3,000 bus stops being cut,
it's
where
the
lines being reduced, and it's making me angry, I have to admit it, because I do understand that they're reorganizing, sometimes need to reorganize, but if you reorganize without providing the budget to increase the offer, it is really difficult, and people are losing their connections, and we need to have a country in which people can rely on public transport, that you go out and that you know, if I go out, there will be a bus. In Brussels, it's maximum 15 minutes. And we really want to stress on that. If on a Sunday night, I live in Ganshoorn, which is one of the communes bits on the outside of Brussels. So I was really far away a place. I just saw my bus passing. I said, I'll take the next one. It was 15 minutes and I was complaining. And I was sending a text to a friend of mine. And I say, just missed the bus. I have to wait for 15 minutes. And she said, are you kidding me?
It's just an hour.
She said, you have a bus every 15 minutes on a Sunday somewhere in a lost space in Brussels. And two, she said, there's a signing indicating the time and you can rely on it. And those are really important elements. But this is what you need to have to give people the comfort to rely on public transport. And if we want to have fewer traffic jams in Brussels, we also need people in Flanders and Wallonia to to change their mobility habits. And so for me, it's important that people in Flanders can use public transport, because a lot of it, it's 400,000 cars every day coming in Brussels, going out the evening. So if those people don't have an alternative, we have a problem. So we do have parking rights. We made them for free, and going to take profit from it to make some publicity. We have free parking rights in Brussels. They're not well known, so that's why I say so. But if people in Flanders cannot rely on public transport, in Brussels we also have a problem. So it's something that actually kind of makes me angry. It costs a lot of money. I know that in Brussels it's 1/6 of our regional budget. It is a lot of money, but which result? And so I can only plead to the Flemish government, please do invest in this public transport, because every euro you put in it, you gain 2 euros back, because the economy flourishes, because people can get around, people go to bars, to concerts, they move around more. So public transport is also an actor of economical wealth. And so please do invest in it, because we really need it in Brussels as well.
Actually, you changed my mind a little bit about Brussels, because as someone from Flanders, we always complain about the traffic when you enter Brussels and so on. That's always a big topic. We always complain about that. But while Flanders is actually cutting down buses, Brussels is investing in mobility heavily. And what is also always a big issue in Flanders in September at the start of the year is the buses for the special needs children, who sometimes sit for 2 hours or 3 hours to go to school. How is that even possible in a country like Belgium, I think?
It's good to say, because Brussels is often seen, and it's always a capital of a country, but we're often seen as we're in the news when there's problems, and so we don't get the news when things are going well. And so it's nice to have podcasts to say there are problems in Brussels.
I definitely changed my mind about Brussels.
We still have work in Brussels, but we do have also good things. And for example, half of the people in Brussels don't own a car. So the car possession is really low.
So they rely on public transport.
They rely on public transport. And so most families in Brussels, they do not own a car. And it's not because they're all ecological cyclists people. It's often because of the cost. The car costs a lot of money, and not everybody can afford it. It takes space. You need a parking space. Yeah. So it is often a choice of an economical choice. So public transport is also a way of offering mobility choices to a population that doesn't always have the money to have a car, and making people because in Flanders say my car is my freedom. I hate that expression, because how is it freedom that you depend on an expensive big metal instrument to get around? For me, real freedom is I can leave my house and I will get anywhere by bike, by bus, by public transport, perhaps by car, without being dependent on having to buy my own personal car. This is, for me, it's a strange way to look at freedom for me. But I can understand for many people, it is the only way to get around.
And exactly, there's reality. No alternative. Yeah.
And so in that way, I think Brussels is a good example also for Flanders. Although we do have issues, we do have problems, but it is it's something I'm proud to defend. And the main traffic jams are coming for people coming to Brussels. And I love people coming to Brussels. We want people to work here. We want people to visit us. But if they often can come by train
or leave their car in the
park and ride, it's better. But we really need reliable trains, more trains. We need to have public transport in Flanders and Wallonia for that as well.
What I actually used last time when I came to Brussels, I parked on the outside of Brussels, and then I used a dot bike to enter. That was very convenient, actually.
That's so, parking rights.
Another question, do cities in Brussels and Belgium talk with other cities, for example, Antwerp? Do you talk with, for example, Antwerp, because they have a very good mobility business with Velo, with the two operators as well? It seems to go good with their drop zones. When you implemented the drop zones, did you maybe reach out or try to learn from each other?
We do learn not only from within Belgium, but also from other capitals in Europe. So, for example, for the shared bikes system, we do have made an analysis what's happening in other capitals. I also often you visit other cities to see what are they doing, how are they doing. So you can learn a lot from one another. For example, if you talked about Antwerp, they also have a mobility as a service in Slim naar Antwerp. So we do learn from one another. I think Leuven, for example, has a pioneer in many, many aspects. It's a small city, but they are really far behind on circulation plans, on driving slower. So they really have inspired us a lot. Ghent as well has taken courageous measurements. Yeah. So we do see that the other cities are inspiring one another. And also Brussels was often not the front run in those things. And now, for example, with 30 kilometers an hour, we had Amsterdam coming to visit Brussels to see how we've done it. And for us, Amsterdam, it's the Netherlands.
Have to be the first if you're the best.
So it's like, okay, this is new. Normally we go to Amsterdam to learn. And so that's important to have this energy. There's also this kind of certain competition also. Okay, what are other cities doing? Or if they can do it, we can do it. We need to be able. So that's a good thing. And I see all over Europe that capitals are really changing, and that the mentality that we had in the 70s till the 90s, a city is where you work and you need to organize cars getting as quickly possible to the workplace and getting away. You say, well, but this is making it impossible for all the people to live there.
It was very car-centric. I think in the 70s, the not La Bourse, but before the Gemeentehuis, there was like a parking, actually.
We had the Grand Place.
Yeah, Grand Place used to be a parking.
In the 70s was a parking space. If you go there now, it's impossible to imagine. But the same before the Bourse. So it used to be a 2x2 car lane. And it was actually an action from citizens saying we cannot tolerate it anymore. It was 15 years ago. So what would we do? I was also an activist at that time. Wasn't yet elected, or was just being elected. We went picnicking every Sunday in the middle of the street. And so it's a very nice action. And so it was very popular. So on a Sunday, we went picnicking before the Bourse. And so it became an action, and to show, okay, we can make this car free. And then politics actually had to follow. Everybody wants to claim to be the mother or the father of that decision, but it was actually citizens claiming their street.
That's really cool.
And so politics had to follow. They made it car-free. And the idea was just before the books, but now it is a whole pedestrian zone in Brussels, which is one of the biggest pedestrian zones in
Europe. Very walkable.
Yes, and there's a lot of people, a lot of shops.
It's bars.
Really alive and kicking. And it used to be two car lanes, a lot of printing shops, and it was not a nice place to be. And so it really changed the city, but also it did made people in Brussels realize we as well can do it differently. We don't have to accept cars dominating every part of our city, and we can reclaim our streets. And that has become a very powerful movement in Brussels for citizens to speak up and to demand change. And that
and
has
a better
been,
life.
Yes.
Well.
And so we've seen that has triggered elements, and that's we see more and more pedestrian zones coming up, and so we see what's happening in Brussels. If I talk to people from Paris, they're having the same movement.
Paris is doing a lot of investment as well.
So we see that it's not only in Brussels, but cities are reclaiming their public space, and I think it's a good thing.
Do you actually also have plans like in Paris of taxing the bigger trucks? I think in Paris they will tax the bigger trucks. That also had a lot of pro and a lot of people against it. It's always like that, right?
It is. So cars are becoming bigger and bigger. And it's a problem because a bigger car, if it's
you don't see the children
higher,
anymore.
Your vision is worse. If there's an accident, it's heavier. So the accident is worse. It takes more time to stop because it's a strong vehicle. It takes
more
space for parking. So there's this international, and as a small Brussels, we will not change this international tendency that also comes from the United States. You have these big pickup trucks, and I often think you need a big
culture.
Ego if you need a big pickup truck to transport one person. If you're doing lumber works in the woods, I can understand you need it. But to get around in Brussels, really use a small, clean car, and that's much better. So we have now, I've asked my administration to make a study and make a comparison to see what's working, because many cities are tackling it by taxing or by increasing the parking prices. So I've asked my administration now to prepare a study and to say, okay, what is happening where, what can we do, and which are the most effective measurements. And so there will be a new government in a few months, so that at that time there's a menu and say, okay, these are the options, and that we can implement the options, because we really need to encourage people. There will always be cars. Some people really need their car.
Yeah.
But to encourage people to have smaller cars and clean cars is really important.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. To kind of like round up this great interview, podcast interview, I have some questions from the people from Brussels.
Okay.
So who live here, who walk here, who cycle here, who have some feedback, some questions that have an influence on their daily life. So someone said, what are the plans for the temporary Corona bike lanes? Some of them are in not so good state, and though they become very crucial for safe cycling, and most of them are just paint and easily removable again. What will the next government do to implement those Corona bike lanes to make them permanent? Or
it's a really good question, because it's always, you want to have to rearrange a street from facade to facade, have a good infrastructure for cycling separated. But that means that, and we're still doing that. So we do have those big investments in structural programs. But it means you need time to ask a permit, you need a plan, you need the money. So you need a lot of. So if we only do this, it's something we
can do. So there's actually a whole process behind it that the people sometimes don't see.
No, it's a double thing. So if you do that, you can do about 15, 20 kilometers every political period, every legislature.
Okay.
But if you really want to increase, sometimes paint can really be a help, because I prefer that way. But if I can, by painting a bicycle and already gain some paint, then we'll do that. So we are doing both. So we start on many places. If we can gain some space, if we have an agreement, because you always need an agreement to take away a car lane, to put in a cycling lane, to take away a parking lane, we take the opportunity, because in that way it's already there. And so we have implemented many kilometers. So we have in total, with all the programs together, 60 kilometers this legislature, which is good. It's the highest ever, which was necessary.
Yeah.
But so we are making sure that those temporary lanes, the COVID lanes, are being made permanent. And there's a crazy procedure behind it to make it legal, because you need to ask for a permit, and the people don't see it. And I don't want to talk about the people, because it's not encouraging, but we are doing that work, finding new place where we can do it. And in the meantime, making sure, okay, now we have this space, let's make it more qualitative. For example, on Lambermont, which is in Schaarbeek, a really important avenue, we have taken away a car lane and put in place a cycling lane with paint. So it's not ideal, but it has improved the quality of cycling a lot in that place.
Yep.
And now we have a plan to make a real reorganization of the whole street, to make sure that we have permanent infrastructure. The same Rue de la Loi, which is probably the most known street, the Wetstraat of Brussels, in front of European institutions. We took away a car lane, we put on some brick, some concrete blocks to separate it.
Yeah, protected by
so we now we had, okay, we want to make it permanent. We actually want to take away another car lane so we can put on some trees and we can have the same infrastructure on both sides. But there's no support for it yet.
Each time you take a car lane away, there's a lot of protests.
It's a lot of protests, but it is necessary. And we see that, because that one is one. It's one of the best used cycling lanes of Brussels. Mm-hmm. And there are more people on a bike being transported than in cars on the same axis. So it is taking away space from cars, but in the number of people that can get transport on that axis, cycling lane is more effective. So it is always looking for a balance and waiting for the right moment. Because now, for example, we could say, okay, we will rearrange a street facade to facade, and I have the support of everybody to take the one lane we took away to make it permanent.
Yep.
But for the second, I have no support. They do it now, it's forever like that. But we know we need on both sides a cycling lane. Made the permit to make it permanent. We did some adaptations. There will be some extra measurements taking this spring on to make it more safe. But I know that I want to make sure that we, the moment that there's openness to get the whole thing done, then we will do the whole thing. So it is looking, and I know I'm also very impatient, and I know this impatience of people cycling Brussels. And so we're trying to work as fast and as good as we can, but it is often procedures, having the people to do so, having the right permits to do so, being confronted with blockades from the local communities because they can always say no and they can stop a work in progress.
We've had that as well. So it is struggling,
but we are giving everything we can, and I hope we'll continue to see Brussels changing and being more and more a cycling city.
I could tell that you really love your city of Brussels, and you've achieved a lot of things in the short amount of time. Do you have any long-term vision for the next 5 years, what you would like Brussels to be, for example? I think when I look at Antwerp and Brussels and Ghent, in terms of mobility, I think they are actually taking the front-runner role in Europe. I think maybe we're a little bit modest, but when I look at the implementations and the realizations that Brussels has done, compared to 5 years ago, I would not have imagined some things. For example, when I was a student, I would have never, that's more than 10 years ago, but I would have never imagined the boulevard being like a walkable or a area. Yeah. So a lot of changes have already been done. So
We're heading up. So I think Ghent and Antwerp, for example, especially Ghent, have been front runners, and Brussels was a bit behind. And I'm not the first one. So before me, my predecessors, I think, for about 15 years now in Brussels, we have this movement, okay, we can do this as well. Let's change our city. And so we are getting by, and we see that it is inspiring other cities in the world. I get a lot of invitations to go to talk in other countries to explain what's happening, because it's this idea, okay, if Brussels can do it, then everybody can do it. That's kind of the basic idea. And it's true. And for us as well, we often looked at Amsterdam or Utrecht. Like, yeah, but it's...
But you've achieved a lot. Yes,
but it's in the north. And I had to tell to my colleagues, yes, but it's political choices. They just made them earlier. So we can do so as well. And for me, the city I'm dreaming of, I'm a mother, and it's a very important reason to be in politics, is I want to leave a better place for older children, but also my children. And so I want a city where a child of 12 can just walk,
like
cycle.
Like a 15-minute city.
Yeah, we call it a 10-minute city because we're a bit smaller, but where they just can go around, and that as a parent, you get your child can go to school by bike, on foot, by public transport, alone. And as parents, that you, instead of saying, be careful, which is what I always say to my children, saying, enjoy. Okay. Enjoy. And that public space is a nice place. It's safe, and it's a place where you want to be, and where your children, they can make a little mistake without being crushed by a car. They can just follow a little butterfly. They can see birds because we have more nature. That it's becoming, again, a joyful, playful trip to go to school, and that children can be independent, and for me that's my future city. And that's if we have that, it means that all the rest will be quite well as well.
Sounds like a good place to live. How do you think that can be achieved in 10 years or
not? We have to. We don't have the luxury of waiting. If you talk about air quality, we are losing lives. So many more children in Brussels have asthma because of air quality. We are losing lives in traffic accidents, and we know how we can prevent that. We cannot cure cancer.
So now it's all about the implementation of the...
So we know what you need to do. We need political courage to do so. So elections will matter. I know that if people all vote for the parties are saying we want to stop all that, well, then that's democracy. But I will fight for this and for this future for my city. This is what drives me. So I am convinced. If you look at what we've done the last 15 years, I know that we can continue this change. And if you imagine yourself being in 2030 and we look back at today, I want to look back and say, okay, this is where we plant a lot of seeds and where we've started things that we didn't thought were possible, and they end up possible. So I'm a very optimist, positive person. So
to round it up, if people want to see the results of the things that you already set up, it's already, you know, a lot of achievements. I think they know who to vote for. So thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
That's nice talking.
Yeah, I wish you all the best with the elections as well.
Thank you to have given me the time to sell Brussels and to make Brussels a bit more popular.
I'm not a fan of Brussels, actually.
Voilà, that's a good thing. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.